From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Dave Iverson. In this hour of Forum, in its heyday at the edge of Golden Gate Park, Playland at the Beach delighted visitors with attractions like Laughing Sal, the Funhouse Maze of Mirrors, a roller coaster, merry-go-round, and a 50-cent chicken dinner. The park was closed in 1972 to make way for condominiums, but plenty of people still remember it fondly, and those who don't can learn about it in a new documentary. Coming up, we'll remember Playland with the owner of a museum in El Cerrito that now houses some of the park's most popular attractions. And we want to hear from you. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Dave Iverson. And that, as anyone who remembers the old Playland at the Beach in San Francisco knows, is Laughing Sal, a mechanical and somewhat maniacal coin-operated character that amused and terrified generations of kids and adults for years. Playland at the Beach, for those who don't remember, took up three city blocks at the western edge of San Francisco, right near Golden Gate Park. At its peak in the early mid-20th century, it attracted thousands of visitors. It featured the Big Dipper roller coaster, a Ferris wheel, a fun house with a mirror maze, and plenty of places to eat. The park was gradually dismantled, and it was closed for good in 1972. Parts of it are now housed in the East Bay at a museum called Playland Not at the Beach. We'll introduce its owner in a minute. But first, the creator of a new documentary called Remembering Playland. It's playing at the Balboa Theater in San Francisco, and filmmaker Tom Wersch joins us now. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Tell us about Playland. What should we know about it if we don't remember it, if we weren't here?
Well, actually, what the film has really done is it's brought back the memories of Playland to the people that were so fond of it and, you know, loved going there. And, you know, with film, you're able to basically take people back. And that's what people have said over the last five shows, which were complete sellouts at the Balboa. They're just thrilled to see it again.
And describe the place at its peak, because it started off, going back even to the late 19th century, the Sutro Baths were there, the Cliff House was there at Ocean Beach. The streetcar came out to the beach, I guess, in around 1890, and so that enabled people to get out there. And how did it come about, Playland?
Well, it actually started out as concessions at the beach and then became shoots at the beach. And Jim Smith, who's with us, I believe, today, can give more details on that. But in 1928, I believe, or 29, it became Playland at the Beach when the Whitney brothers purchased it. And most of the people that are obviously coming to see the film know it as Playland at the Beach.
And there were rides and concessions. And looking at the film, the archival footage, it seemed like there were mostly adults there. Was that the case? Was it for adults or was it for kids or both?
Well, in the early days, when it was shoots at the beach, you'll see mostly adults, that wore suits and hats. But more in Playland, it became both adults and kids.
And they went there for what? To have fun, obviously. Was it for the rides mostly, or some of this time, of course, was during the Depression. So was it a cheap thrill in a way?
Well, I like to consider it that it was like San Francisco's Disneyland because people in the early days really didn't travel as far away as they do nowadays. So Playland offered them the entertainment of the rides and the fun house and lots of food establishments. So it was, a place for people of San Francisco and the neighboring areas to go.
And in terms of timing, was it sort of modeled after, say, Coney Island in New York?
I've heard that, and I think some of that is true. It really was the Coney Island of the West Coast at one time.
And so the film is playing. I know you said it started off with a very short run, but it's been extended because it's sold out. So if people want to see it, when and where can they go to see it?
Well, there's a show tomorrow that is sold out, but the Balboa has added one on Sunday at noon, And then there's two more shows next weekend, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, both at noon. And then there's one the following Saturday at noon.
And how did you decide to, why did you decide to put this film together?
Well, because I went to Playland when I was young and enjoyed it, but I've met so many people that just love Playland and really had no way to see it other than maybe photographs and postcards and of course a lot of people going to Playland not at the beach and you know remembering it from there, and I decided that this was just a great way to bring people back.
All right, and again, they can check out that film if they want to see it at the Balboa Theater. It's sold out tonight, but go to tomorrow it's sold out, but there are tickets available for future showings. I guess just go to maybe the Balboa Theater's website. Tom, good luck with the film. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And I want to bring in now three people who worked with Tom on the film and who have intimate knowledge, I guess you could say, of Playland at the Beach. With me here in the studio, Richard Tuck, who is the Master of Fun. Is that your official title?
That is my title, yep.
At Playland, not at the beach, in El Cerrito, which is an amusement park, a museum, really, that's dedicated to some of the artifacts and pinball machines and that sort of thing that were seen at Playland in its heyday, right?
Exactly.
Also with us, Jim Smith, who is a San Francisco historian. He's got a book coming out called San Francisco's Playland at the Beach, The Early Years. Good to have you here as well.
Well, thank you.
And also in the studio, Marvin Gold, a former employee at Playland at the Beach. And I have to say, is that you're wearing a shirt from Playland? Is that one of the original shirts, Marv?
No, this is from Playland, not at the beach. Okay. However, I do have two pairs of coveralls from 1969 that I wear to special events.
All right. Very good. Well, tell us about Playland at the Beach. When did you work there?
I grew up a block from Laughing Sal. My parents bought a home at the corner of 48th and Cabrillo when I was a year old in 1955. My dad worked there 59, 60, 61, and I worked there from the early part of summer 68 until it closed September 4th, Labor Day 72.
What was it like growing up that close to the park?
Oh, it was fabulous. I mean, you know, every day after elementary school, I'd drop my books off at home, and I'd walk down to the Cabrillo Street Arcade, not to play the pinballs, but to go back into the shop and watch the mechanic work on them.
You were just fascinated by
it. Yeah.
And how'd you get a job there? How old were you?
I was 15 when I started at Playland, and after about 3 weeks, I actually had three games leased out and people working for me. And then I moved over to the rides and worked on all the rides. And at one time or another in the 4 years I worked out there, I did literally everything. I ran Fascination, Bingo with a Ball. I did the fry cooking at the Merry-Ground restaurant. I ran the Merry-Ground, the Funhouse, the Dodger, gave breaks to all the other rides.
Must have been awesome to go down the roller coaster there right so close to the ocean.
Well, the Big Dipper was condemned and torn down in 55, so I was too small to have ever gone on it. They replaced it with an Alpine Racer, which was their version of the Wild Mouse, and that's what was there, along with a number of portable roller coasters that they would bring in and then take back out on the road.
You mentioned the Wild Mouse. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, and I remember the Wild Mouse from Crystal Beach, which has been torn down. It was the Wild Mouse a trademark? Were there Wild Mouses all over the place?
Santa Cruz had one.
Oh, they did.
Their water flume ride is now was a Wild Mouse. And Playland's Alpine Racer was identical to the Wild Mouse. It was just called something else.
Hmm. Now, you said you grew up close to three blocks from Laughing Sal. Could you hear Laughing Sal like all night long and while you were trying to go to sleep?
Playland was open until early in 1964, noon to midnight, 365 days a year. First 10 years of my life, I went to sleep to her laugh every single night.
It was a little scary, wasn't it?
Actually, you know, I volunteer at Playland, not at the beach now, and we've got three Laughing Sals there. And the one at the front door is mostly on, and I tune it out so well that sometimes I don't even realize that she's not on.
Richard Tuck, tell us about Playland, not at the beach. How did that come about, and how did you go about collecting the things that you – well, what do you have there, first of all?
We've got a little bit of everything, and I should probably clarify – it is a museum, but it really isn't. It's a lot more like a fun house. Yes, we've got all these fabulous artifacts, and what we couldn't get our hands on because they don't exist anymore, we've had incredibly talented artists come in and recreate. But more important than that, we know that we would have a limited audience if all it was artifacts. So instead, we've recreated the joy of all the different kinds of amusements that were out at the beach. So this is a lot more hands-on where you experience things. When people come in, they're going to walk out with teddy bears. I mean, they're going to play the old games. Now, not everything we have is from Playland. We've been very successful at getting places like Knott's Berry Farm, and especially the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk donated their fascination tables to us. So we've got things from, in fact, even from Coney Island. But the idea is to take people, when they come through the door, whether they're 8 or 88, and in a matter of just a short visit, everybody's going to feel like they're 7 or 8 years old. So they're going to see the historic films that we've got, and we've got some wonderful things from Playland, as well as the Sutro Baths. They're going to walk into a circus sideshow and see, they're going to meet Big Myrtle, born with 2 heads and 5 legs. So we're going to take them back to the good old days of the carnies and the things like, what do you mean that woman was born with no head? We're going to take them into a miniature circus with 300,000 pieces hand-carved. They're going to go to Santa's Village, a recreation of the old amusement park from the Santa Cruz Mountains.
And there's at least one or what, 2 or 3 Laughing Sal's there too, right?
Well, the Laughing Sal thing is interesting. It's the number one question we get asked. Do you have the original Laughing Sal? And my answer to that is Whitney's Playland had Laughing Sal's, E-I-E-I-O. Here a Sal, there a Sal, even a headless Sal, E-I-E-I-O. The truth of the matter is that San Francisco cannot possibly have had the original Sal because it was a mass-produced product you bought from a catalog. The catalog's Sal's went on sale in 1923, and the Whitney family didn't purchase one until 1940. So there's hundreds and hundreds out there, not all existing anymore.
But they were that many were made.
Yes. And in fact, here in the Bay Area, you've still got 3 that are absolutely amazing. The one at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, the one on Pier 45 at Musée Mécanique, and then, of course, we have a collection of 3.
And your Playland, not at the beaches, is nonprofit, right?
Yes, we're a 501c3.
So what does it cost to go there?
Oh, we're expensive. It's a whopping $10 for kids up to the age of 14, $10 for a seniors 55 and older, and the general admission price is $15. And that includes all the 34 pinball machines on free play, penny arcade games where we supply all the pennies, all the carnival games where you can play and play 1,000 times if you like. We've got live shows, magic, sideshow acts. We've got treasure hunts. So we try to bring out the kid in everybody. Mm. Nothing's static. It's always changing.
Jim Smith, tell us a little bit. Give us more of a sense of what it was like to go there. Marvin Gold talked about it more from the latter years. What was your, from what you've learned, what was it like to be there, you know, in its heyday, really?
Well, it was great. I mean, you know, as a kid, I started going first with my dad and then with the church. I went to First Covenant out in San Francisco and then also as an examiner newsboy because the Whitneys and Playland itself always had days for newsboys and other groups, boys club and that sort of thing. But you get out there and it was just – it was overwhelming. There was so much to do. There were so many sounds, so many smells. Kids, younger kids usually gravitated towards the playhouse. I mean, you know, the first thing you want to do is get in there, see who's going to get nailed by the air hose. And, you know, and then from there we'd want to go on the giant slide, you know, 4 stories up. You climb this thing up there and you go down the wooden slide and do that a few times. But then you'd want to get out and go on the carousel,
which still exists,
it still exists. It's out at the museum right now in Yerba Buena, right. And that one was built right about the same time as the Pan Pacific, or it was built earlier, but it was installed out there.
Must have been a great place to take a date, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because, you know, there were games of chance, games of skill. You know, you could show off and win her a giant teddy bear. And for the most part, I mean, a lot of the games were rigged, but there was still the opportunity to win something and show your prowess. And you saw a lot of guys walking around with these giant, you know, girl on one arm and a giant teddy bear on the other.
What do you mean they were rigged?
Well, I mean, you know, everything from the milk bottles, which the setting of the milk bottles to if you looked at the knockdown baby game and that sort of thing, with the lead bottoms, you could hit them with the ball and they just kind of pop right back up again sometimes. So it was really hard.
Yeah.
I used to go to the shooting gallery and I was a pretty good shot, But the bores on those things were sanded out a bit to where they weren't as accurate maybe as the shooter. So you couldn't really ever do much with it.
We are talking about Playland at the Beach, and our guest this hour on Forum, Richard Tuck, who is the master of fun at Playland Not at the Beach in El Cerrito, a museum and amusement center. Also here, Jim Smith, a San Francisco historian who's written a book called San Francisco's Playland at the Beach, The Early Years. And also here, Marvin Gold, a former employee at Playland at the Beach. We heard earlier from Tom Wirsch, whose film Remembering Playland at the Beach is playing at the Balboa Theater. There was a big accident, I think, at the Playland. It was the bobsled ride, I think. And I don't know the details of that, but can you maybe talk about that?
There was. So,
Jim Smith?
The bobsled went off the track. And
what year are we talking about here?
This is about 1928, 29. I think it was 28. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, what happened was the bobsled was a pretty fast roller coaster. And again, there were no seat belts or safety bars or anything. This thing went off the track above the one of the arcade areas, and people were literally hanging off and some fell. Nobody died, but people were injured. So John Friedel, who owned the park at that time, was afraid of being sued. And that's when he started turning it over to the Whitney brothers for them to take over the park.
When did it actually become called Playland at the Beach?
1929.
In 1929, yeah. You know, I think this is a good topic to bring our callers in earlier. We usually wait till after the break, but I'm sure there are many listeners who have memories of Playland or who'd like to ask our guests some questions about it. So why don't we open the phones a little bit early? 866-733-6786 is the number to call. 866-733-6786. And as always, you can email us. It's forum at kqed.org. Marvin Gold, talk about the crowd that came there. Was it mostly locals? Was it people from throughout the Bay Area? Was it a big tourist attraction back then? San Francisco was a very different place then in terms of who came to visit, I think.
Well, I think that's true. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, I mean, Playland attracted crowds from everywhere. Okay. One of the attractions at Playland was to play the games, and when the Whitneys owned Playland, any point tickets that you won, whether it be at one of the electric wheels where you bet on a number, and if your number came in, they paid you off in point tickets, or in some other form, like my dad ran the cigarette wheel, you bet a dime on a number, and if your number came in, they paid you in cigarettes. But the point tickets at Whitney's Playland at the Beach were as good as cash. So if you were playing skee ball and you won 50 points, you could walk out the Fascination Building door, make a right turn, go up to the It Shop window and get an It's It with point tickets.
The ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, the ice cream sandwiches, right. So the crowds were diverse. The gambling out there, the wheels was closed down in early 64. And that was probably the transition between Playland's continuing success and it beginning to go downhill.
And why was it taken away?
Well, there were a number of fusses going on in North Beach. A amusement license was issued to a proprietor in North Beach. And the first thing they did was open a wheel exactly like Playland's. And
where was that?
I don't know.
In North Beach?
It was in North Beach, yes. Mm. It was one of the clubs in North Beach. A competitor across the street attempted to get an amusement license to do the same thing and was told that the city had made a mistake. The charter only had one amusement license, and that was for Playland. Court things went on, and they closed those things down. And, of course, they pointed to Playland and said, well, if we can't have a wheel, they can't either. And so the wheels got closed down. Most of the games at Playland, like poker roll, skee ball, the penny pitches, were very legitimate. The ones that were mentioned, like knock over the baby dolls, the cat rack, the milk bottles, those were carnival-type games that either were so difficult it was next to impossible to get it done, or they were concessionaires that gave you non-Playland point tickets. They gave you like one win. But the crowds, I remember going to the Funhouse almost every Friday night when I was 7, 8 years old. My mom would take us there at 6 p.m. She'd pick us up at midnight. It was 30 cents when I was a kid. And there was nothing in the Funhouse to spend money on. Okay, there were no snack bars, no snack machines. So you were there for 30 cents for the whole night. And all walks of life, everybody in the Bay Area, okay, it drew crowds from everywhere. And the tourists in town would walk through the Midway. Even if all they did was walk through the Midway and look, they were part of the crowd.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Let's go bring in our callers now. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. And Gary is on the line in Vallejo. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I was working there at Playland. I was a college student at State in 68, 69. It was a great job. I lived right down the beach there. And I ran the minor rides, but, as most of us kind of plebes did. But there was a couple of things that were pretty interesting. One of the things that was kind of a hazardous duty, the shooting gallery used live ammunition in those days, and the guns were on a tether. They weren't fastened down, so you always had to be real polite. Yeah, you always had to be really polite when you were running the shooting gallery. And the other thing was that Playland was a really favorite hangout for the Gypsy Jokers and the Hells Angels. And one of the other rides that I used to run was the Kooky Cube, which wasn't much of a ride. It's just one of these disorienting things. But these guys would go in there just completely wasted, and they get in and they couldn't get out.
They got lost.
they wouldn't get lost. They'd get the corners would fade away, and all of a sudden I'd start hearing this, give me out, man, give me out. And they'd be trapped down in the corner, and I was about 150 pounds soaking wet. I had to go in there and drag these 300-pound bikers out of there.
Who were the Gypsy Jokers? Was that another biker?
That was the other rival. There was a big gang at the time, and they all used to hang out and party and occasionally get into a little bit of altercations.
Yeah.
But that was the other main San Francisco gang was the Gypsy Jokers.
Well, the shooting gallery aside, was there ever any, violence?
Sure, between the bikers there was. Yeah, they'd go down to the, what was that, Bean Pot or whatever that was out there, and there was always something going on down there.
Yeah. So yep. did you work there till it closed in 1972?
Oh, no, I just worked there while I was going to college in 68, 69, and then went on to other things. But it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience.
All right. Well, Gary, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate the memories. And we have a lot much more to talk about coming up in the next half hour. We hope that you will join us. Again, the number 866-733-6786. We're talking about Playhouse at the Beach, a new film documentary playing at the Balboa Theater. And we've got some folks here who worked there and know a whole lot about it. You can call us or email us, forum@kqed.org. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Dave Iverson. And this hour, we're talking about Playland at the Beach, that old iconic amusement park at San Francisco's western edge there at Ocean Beach. Joining us in the studio, Jim Smith, a San Francisco historian and author of the forthcoming book, San Francisco's Playland at the Beach, The Early Years. Also here, Marvin Gold, a former employee at Playland at the Beach. He's also on the advisory board of Playland Not at the Beach, which is run by our other guest, Richard Tuck, an amusement park fun center over in El Cerrito. Where in El Cerrito is that, by the way?
Right on San Pablo Avenue in the center of the town, just across the street from City Hall and the fire department.
All right. Very good. Let's bring some callers in here. A lot of people want to talk about Playland. Again, the number 866-733-6786. You can also post a comment, by the way, on our website. Just visit kqed.org/forum and click on this segment. Let's go down to the phones, and Henry is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Henry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I used to, when I was in college at San Francisco State College, I worked in the late 1940s. At Playland, at the dice concession.
Tell us about it.
It was like being in Las Vegas in San Francisco, because we used to pay under the counter prizes.
How did it work? Tell us.
Well, you'd have the guy would come and they'd toss the dice out, and if they got a certain number of points, then they won, and then you'd give them some prizes, or you could give them some money, especially the ones that were coming all the time.
Yeah, it wasn't fixed. I guess it couldn't be, really.
No, it wasn't fixed. No, it wasn't. One thing that I do remember, my cousin worked at the pie shop at Playland, and they made wonderful fruit pies. And then near there was the hot house where they had cup tamales and chili, and they served Parisian French bread, and people came there just to eat.
Wow.
It was so good.
Sounds good. And it was called, was it Shoots?
Shoot the Shoots.
Shoot the Shoots, and that's C-H-U-T-E, Shoot the Shoots.
So. And you get kind of wet, too, because you get the little water splashed in your face when you finally came down.
Where did that name come from, Jim Smith?
So that's an old name. The Shoots ride was a franchise. Came from the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. San Francisco had four different franchises of it, the one at Playland being the last.
Mm-hmm.
And that became the name of the first park, Shoots at the Beach. And by the way, Shoot the Shoots was S-H-O-O-T, Shoot, and then the Shoots, C-H-U-T-E-S.
Got it.
So you were shooting the Shoots.
Got it. All right. Well, thanks for the call, Henry. And let's go to an email here. Vivian writes, my family has many memories of Playland. My brother and I spent many summer days in the late 40s and early 50s, since we lived just a few blocks away. We actually would find tickets to the Caterpillar ride and other rides that were in the trash. It was a magical place. My aunt and her husband had their wedding party at Topsy Turvy's Roost in the late 1930s, where there was a slide down to the dance floor. My ex-husband and I rode the Big Dipper on our first date in 1955. I nearly fell out. It was torn down soon after. This was, of course, the pre-regulation day, I imagine, to a certain extent. I mean, there weren't the kind of regulations and inspections that we would have today at, say, Disneyland.
Oh, no, there weren't. But they did inspect it. They kept it safe for the most part. As a matter of fact, in my upcoming book, it shows where they had some rotted piers under the Big Dipper for replacements. They'd go through and look at those things.
It wasn't completely the Wild West.
It wasn't completely the Wild West. But people did get hurt. People did die. I mean, there were a number of people who died on the Big Dipper. There was one sailor in 1945. This was supposedly an urban legend. It's not. He was standing up in the car with his date showing off and hit his head on one of the crossbeams and had his head smashed and fell into her lap.
Mm.
Didn't lose his head, but I mean, it was crushed.
That was the rumor, though, right?
That was the urban legend. The urban legend was it actually fell off and into the lap of a gal in a car below. That part's not true. But yeah, I mean, and he had just come back from World War II in the Pacific, so he'd survived the Japanese, but did not survive the Big Dipper.
Wow. Let's go back to the phones now, and Nelson is on the line from El Cerrito. Thanks for calling. Hi, Nelson.
Hi. As a kid, I went to the Fun House a lot, and to me, by far, as a kid, that was the best attraction. There were multiple things you could do in there. One of which was the barrel. It was a revolving barrel, wooden barrel, huge cylinder essentially, and you had to walk through it, and you would. So this thing was revolving under you, and you would fall and be pulled up partway of the barrel before sliding down, and so you'd finally get through it. And I mean, as a kid, I just had so much fun doing that. Another thing was the platter, which was like a record, you know, like an LP, and a bunch of people would gather in the middle of it, and then it would start to spin, and you try to keep on the platter and keep from being pushed off by the centrifugal force.
Or throwing up, I imagine.
You know, yeah, well, that never happened to me, but I suppose I suppose some of the kids probably did have to. But and another one was the stairs. They had a very long staircase, and the staircase was split in half. And each side of the stairs moved independently up and down mechanically, and you had to navigate that. And all these things took a fair amount of physical coordination and balance and so on. And I think, also they had a slide, a huge wooden slide that went all the way from the ceiling down to the floor. It was great.
Yeah, that's what the email.
A few of the things, but my point is that I don't think you would have a fun house today like that because I think people are too litigious. I think they would either wrap you in heavy padding, or hook a harness to you, a very restricting harness. They wouldn't trust you to do the kind of things that kids love to do.
Yeah,
because you could get hurt.
Well, and Jim Smith, a number of people in the film, we talked to Tom Wersch earlier, the filmmaker from Remembering Playland, and a number of people talked about, and you could see in some of the pictures too, that the rides were, you know, either dangerous or kind of edgy. You know, there was a lot of skeletons and sort of there was a darkness to some of the attractions that were there.
Yeah, it was that was part of the fun. I mean, you know, you get this adrenaline rush, and that's what kids went for. I mean, you know, they don't have this opportunity today to expend all of that adrenaline on something that is that much fun.
Yeah. Marvin?
The caller was talking about the platter in the funhouse. That was called the Joy Wheel, and it was operated by the employee that was sitting just above it and also had all the handles to squirt the air that would squirt up the ladies' dresses. The wooden slide was four lanes, and it was actually five stories tall, so it went out above the roof of the Cliff House. There was an extension, and originally the Big Dipper had a turn that went all the way around the top of the slide. So the Big Dipper went from Fulton Street to the top of the funhouse. It was that big.
Wow. There was a ride there called, or an attraction called, the Diving Bell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Tell us about that.
The Diving Bell was invented by a gentleman that installed it at the 1939 Treasure Island Fair. And the first one that was put in at Playland, somewhere just after that point, the tank is actually still in the ground under the Safeway that's at the beach there now. In the early 50s, they built a new one on the main block at Playland, and that's the one that most people remember. It was a watertight bell that was taken under the water about 35, 40 feet by a cable system that took it down a center pole. The cable system used a cable car-like grip, so the operator would close the watertight door, and you had portholes to look out of. And originally, it was built as sort of an aquarium ride where there were sea creatures, but at the end, it was just the thrill. The operator would take you down underwater and give you a little spiel, and then he would release the cable grip, release the brake, and the bell would shoot up out of the water.
Wow. Well, let's go to the phones now because Jim in Milpitas, looks like you have a memory of the Diving Bell.
Yeah, I was just gonna bring that up myself. I love that Diving Bell for some reason. Yeah, it was a great ride down, and then the splash up was the thrill, of course. But I didn't know whether it was in a tank or somehow the ocean was involved in that.
So it was contained, Marvin?
It was contained, yes.
How many people Jim, how many people could get in the bell?
If I remember correctly, about six. You're talking about Jim.
Yeah, Jim, go ahead.
If I remember correctly, it was maybe six or eight people, or maybe not that many. It was fairly small.
Yeah, Marvin's saying eight?
Yeah.
About eight people.
There were
eight
portholes.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I remember about Playland, besides going there a lot, my grandmother was a nut for it, and she'd take us kids there all the time. And I went there from 1955 to 1960, and the Pronto Pups, we just loved to get in line for the Pronto Pups.
What were those?
Those were hot dogs, you know, the old hot dogs dipped in batter and deep fried.
Like corn dogs, kind of?
Like corn dogs, yeah. What they're called corn dogs now, they were called Pronto Pups. It was a thing special to Playland, as far as I knew, at that time.
Marvin?
They were the Prana Pups that the caller's talking about were at the Bull Pup Restaurant, which was on the corner of the Great Highway in Balboa, just across the street from the main block of Playland next to the entrance to Skateland. And they were hand-dipped in a batter called Prado Pups. And then they were deep-fried like corn dogs, and they were available at the Bull Pup Restaurant.
And no one cared about trans fats or anything else back then. All right, Jim, thanks for the call. Again, 866-733-6786. Give us a call or email us, forum@kqed.org. And you can always post a comment on our website. Just go to kqed.org/forum and click on this segment. Bonnie has an email, and she writes, I love the wooden slide. Does it exist anywhere now? Thank you for the program bringing up the great memories. This was the slide that went into the dance floor. Is that right?
You had two different slides. First of all, earlier we mentioned the person who called in referred to it as the Topsy-Turvy Club. It was actually Topsy's Roost, and that was this huge nightclub, the most popular in all of San Francisco. People actually flew in from other parts of the world to go to Topsy's Roost. Hmm. And after you'd have your chicken dinner in these little bungalows that were made to look like chicken coops, then you'd get on these wooden slides and slide down to the dance floor. It was a very elegant place. People were really dressed to the hilt.
What kind of music were they playing?
It changed over the years. At times they had minstrel music. Other times they had jazz combos. Some of the big bands, the lesser known ones, would perform there.
Hmm.
But, of course, the slide that's the most famous is the big, huge wooden one that was at the Funhouse. And that was torn to in pieces when everything was dismantled in 1972.
And I think that's what Bonnie was referring to in her email.
Right.
Here's an email from Maureen, who writes, our family home was at 42nd and Balboa, and I spent many Saturdays at Playland, as well as evenings falling to sleep to the squeals of people riding the Big Dipper. The true aficionados of Playland never went to the Funhouse first. We arrived with 25 cents, went on four rides, and spent our last ticket at the Funhouse, where there was no time limit. Good strategy. Also, Playland should be considered the original fast food row in San Francisco. My mother would pile the four of us in her Plymouth, and we would drive from shop to shop buying our favorites. Chicken turnovers, corn dogs, and I think some enchiladas topped off with an It's It or an apple turnover. A lot of good food there, huh?
Yeah, the pie shop had chicken and beef turnovers that were the absolute best turnovers in the world. And the It's It ice cream sandwich was invented at the It Shop restaurant in 1928.
Jim Smith, of course, the Sutro Baths were there, and the Cliff House as well. How did all those things, you know, interact with each other?
Well, they really did quite well. I mean, people would go out there and maybe, you know, take a morning and do the Sutro Baths, either, you know, watching, going through the museums or whatever was there. Later on, it was ice skating, but, you know, you could swim, and you rented the suits there, which, by the way, were wool and were nasty. And then you'd go down the hill and finish your day and evening out at Playland at the beach. So they worked well together, and eventually George Whitney bought the whole shooting match.
And did the baths close before or after, or just around the same time?
It was around the same time. It closed a little bit before. And then, of course,
probably helped with the demise in general of the whole amusement park.
Yeah, it just, you know, unfortunately, it just wasn't making it.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Jerry's on the line from Mountain View. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, hi there. Well, I have an indelible memory of Playland. My father took me there for my 11th birthday along with my buddy. And I had never been to a big amusement park like that. And so, I loved the platter. It was really frustrating because only one person could stay on it, and that was the person who was right in the very center. Everybody else just got thrown off.
Well, you were the birthday boy when you went, I think.
Yeah,
right? So
but
did you get
the big memory that I have is that we went on the roller coaster, and my dad sat behind me, and my buddy and I were in the very front car. And being an 11-year-old with skinny little legs, the bar brought it down to my legs, left a big gap. And so I was holding on for dear life. And as we go up the very first top thing, you know, nick, 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 kind of roaring down that first thing, and up the second one, it did a dip to one side, and it threw me out of the car. I was standing completely up as we're coming back down the second trough. And fortunately, my dad, being behind me, just reached back forward and grabbed my belt and pulled me back into the car.
Wow.
Wow.
Near-death experience.
Like it was no big deal, you know, and but I've never forgotten that, and I've loved roller coasters ever since.
Yeah. Do you now you live down near Great America. Do you go down there much?
Not much anymore, no. If my grandchildren were around, I would. But,
yeah, that's a very different kind of place.
Yeah.
All right, Jerry, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Peggy, who's on the line in Santa Rosa. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, my name's Peggy Vincent. I live up in Santa Rosa. I was born and raised in San Francisco, and I have a website about the old Playland at the beach. Wanted to say hi to Marv down there. He's a buddy of mine, and we worked together on saving the Camera Obscura. The Parks Department was getting ready to tear it down, and there was a gentleman from Philadelphia who came out on a business trip and caught wind of what was going on. And so then there was a group of us called Friends of the Camera Obscura, and we managed to convince the Parks Department to save it, and it was declared a historic landmark in May of 2001.
And it's still there.
It's still there. Otherwise, it would have been torn down. And the Musée Mécanique, which was part of George Whitney's, all of his penny attractions, they were evicted in 2002, and now they're down by Fisherman's Wharf. But there was supposed to be a Merriway Visitor Center built down by Cliff House to keep the historic significance of it, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. But Playland was a great place to live or to play. I used to go down to the Fun House, and my mother could get rid of us all day for 50 cents. And we would run around in our socks. They wouldn't let you wear your shoes in there. And everything was wooden. It was before plastic. So you would run all day with these black socks on. And
better than getting splinters, I guess.
Well, the floor was so polished from being walked on for a million years, it was just just great.
Well, you know, Peggy's point raises the question of preservation. I mean, nowadays in San Francisco, if anybody tried to tear something like this down, I mean, the doggy diner heads are still, you know, you see them on the back of a truck every now and then because those have been saved. Jim Smith, was there much of an effort to save Playland?
There were some efforts to save Playland, but at that time, you know, we were just still trying to grow, still trying to add people. You know, we're 7 miles by 7 miles. So the idea was, gee, we can build housing and have more people here, and that's what happened. That's how you wound up with the Seal Rocks project.
And so there are a bunch of condos there now, and the Safeway
right.
is
and
there.
And what they did is they closed out Playland right after Labor Day 1972. By the end of November, everything was gone, but the Seal Rocks project was not completed until 1990.
And so there wasn't a huge controversy to close it down?
Sure, it was a hot controversy, but, you know, the Board of Supes saw the
city was in a development mode.
They were in development mode. They saw an opportunity, and they went with it, although they did punish the developers.
They punished them?
Oh, yeah. They didn't let them build for, 18 years?
Yeah. Here's an email from Daryl who writes, I grew up in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Valley, and our usual escape from the intense summer heat was to the city. I always looked forward to these days because it meant Playland at the beach and the Sutro Baths. My favorites at Playland were the roller coaster, the submarine tank, and the funhouse. It took me forever to master the barrel roll and the funhouse and the slipping and sliding floors, but I finally did it. Playland introduced me to the It's It, and I still enjoy them when I can find them. Thanks for stirring up some very old and positive memories. Also, Al writes, what fun it was as a teen in the 1940s and 50s to take a holiday from school, take the ferry across the bay, trolley straight to Playland, and spend the day with a finish of their great chili. If anyone's curious, I ran the bottle game when the carnival came to town, and the fix was putting the heavy leaded bottle at the bottom. No way, unless you were Randy Johnson, could you win. That's what you were saying earlier, Jim. I think that it was that kind of the fix was in. But a lot of fun was had nonetheless, I'm sure.
Oh, it was great.
Let's go back to the phones now. Bobby is calling from San Jose. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Hi. There was a movie called The Lady from Shanghai in the late 40s by Orson Welles, and it is only known because he cut Rita Hayworth's long red hair and dyed it blonde. But it's the very ending is very dramatic. It's at the Hall of Mirrors at Playland. I wonder if they knew about that movie and if they know of any others. that were filmed there.
Hmm. Marvin?
Richard, do you want to?
Yeah, in our theater, at our museum, we have all of the films showing all the time that were filmed at Playland. And unfortunately, there's not many.
Hmm.
The Orson Welles film, Lady from Shanghai, really only has about 40 seconds that was filmed at Playland. So the whole scene in the Hall of Mirrors and all that was all Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was nothing like the inside of the Funhouse. As Orson Welles walks across, even Laughing Sal is hidden behind a curtain. And to fit the theme of the movie, it's renamed the Crazy House. Now, there's another movie called The Woman on Pier 13. Its original title was I Married a Communist, with Lorraine Day and all-star cast of B players. And that's got some really great footage of the Midway and some of the rigged games. In fact, it even says they're rigged. Unfortunately, there were a lot of other movies that supposedly were filmed there, and it wasn't true. They were filmed all over San Francisco.
Yeah.
But then when it gets to the point where they say, let's go out to the beach, suddenly it was easier to film at Santa Monica Pier or someplace
right.
in Southern California.
Yeah.
So there's only a handful that was actually filmed at San Francisco.
Marvin?
The lineup, the movie The Lineup, has a really great scenes toward the end with Eli Wallach in Sutros. In
the baths.
Sutros baths, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. To what extent was Disneyland, did Walt Disney come to Playland and look around and get some ideas?
Yeah,
Marvin?
Walt visited with amusement parks all over the country, and in the early 50s he came to Playland. He really respected George Whitney and his ideas and things, and Walt ended up stealing George Whitney Jr. from Playland, and George Whitney Jr. became Imagineer number 7. And also one of the Gilmans, Bob Gilman, who's part of the family, also was working at Disneyland.
To design rides and things?
All kinds of things. It was George Whitney Jr.'s convincing of Walt Disney that you could not put live animals in the Jungle Cruise ride that led to the development of audio animatronics. And at Playland, not at the beach in El Cerrito, the original Penny Arcade street sign from Main Street USA, we have in our Penny Arcade.
Cool. Let's try to sneak another couple calls in here. It looks like Thomas in Hercules is on the line. Hi there.
Yes, hi. Best memory of Disneyland. My brother and I had Oakland Tribune news routes back then, and they would take us to Disneyland after signing up new customers every year, and they would take us on a whole caravan of Greyhound buses with police motorcycle escorts, so we felt like VIPs. Once there, of course, the Big Dipper was the primary attraction, and you had kids who were real masochists who would go on time and time again at 10 or 11 years old and probably invented the "you look ma no hands" scenario. They would ride down with, you know, hands in the air,
yeah,
which is pretty exciting.
and Richard Tuck, with you could just get on and on and on with the lines. Like at Disneyland, the lines are forever. I mean, was it like that at Playland at all? Or did
no,
you?
Playlands were much shorter. I mean, the quantity of people was much less condensed. You got to remember, this was really foggy and cold. So people usually didn't stay the whole day. They'd want to go inside and play games. They'd warm up a bit. Then they'd go out into the fog again to go try some of the thrill rides.
But we do have photographs of the Big Dipper where the line was down the midway and out onto the street.
Yeah.
There were days like that.
Yeah. And place it along the beach. It went from where to where? What
streets?
It went
from the corner of Fulton Street along the Great Highway to the edge of the hill where it starts going up to the Cliff House. The furthest northern building that was left was what was the building that was Topsy's Roost, which eventually became the Surf Club, which eventually became the largest slot car track in the world, Model Car Raceways, which eventually became Chet Helms' Family Dog.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then coming back from it, you had Balboa. Cabrillo was where the B Street car and later the 38 Geary bus turned around. That was the middle of the midway.
Yeah.
The two main blocks were from Cabrillo to Balboa and from Cabrillo to Fulton.
All right. Let's try to get another call in here. Paul is on the line in Vallejo. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I lived on Fulton Street between 40th and 41st. And I went to Playland many times. I worked in the kiosk. It was on Cabrillo, the end of Cabrillo Street, that sold hot dogs and hot pastrami. And years later, I was principal of a school in San Francisco. We had an artist in residence who claimed that he was commissioned by Jeremy Etz Hocken, the guy who bought Playland and then had it raised, that he was commissioned by Jeremy to paint a portrait of a big hole in the ground with a middle finger standing up in it because he had been traumatized as a child by friends who teased him when they were playing at Playland.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Probably an apocryphal story, but it was interesting.
Part of the lore. Thanks for the call. We're short on time. I want to read a quick email here from Dale. As a kid growing up in San Francisco, I spent many memorable days at Playland. In the early 70s, I was a student. It was then called the California College of Arts and Crafts. My girlfriend heard that Playland was being demolished. She'd never been there, wondered if we could find some cool artifacts to create some found artwork. We found our way into the Funhouse, which for me was an experience like a Fellini film. It was silent, dark, and eerie, contrast to the raucous insanity of my childhood memories. We found a couple of burlap sacks and made the ascent to the top of the slide in total darkness and made one final zip down so fast that the humps allowed us to grab some air on the way down. Thanks again for the reminder of what some of my most joyous childhood memories growing up in San Francisco were. Lots of people, I think, remembering the Playland very, very fondly this hour. Don't forget, you can see that film, Remembering Playland at the Beach, at the Balboa Theater. Do check ahead of time, though, because some of those shows are sold out, but there are some shows it has been extended, so do check that out. Thanks to Tom Wersch, the filmmaker of that film, for joining us earlier in the hour. Thanks also to Jim Smith, San Francisco historian, author of the forthcoming book, San Francisco's Playland at the Beach. Thanks also to Marvin Gold and Richard Tuck, master of fun at Playland Not at the Beach in El Cerrito. Forum is produced by Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Dave Iverson. Thanks a lot for listening, and have a good weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.